Have you ever been in a rough spot in life? Down on your luck, out of work, not enough cash to pay the bills, sick in the hospital, and somebody, a friend or a family member or a stranger out of nowhere was there for you. A note of encouragement, groceries on your doorstep, a place to stay, a visit to the hospital for prayer. How do you repay people for generosity like that? My wife and I adopted a beautiful girl from Uganda in the last few months. And early in the year, at the tail end of the adoption process, we got the call from the adoption agency saying, it's time to go over to Uganda and pick up your daughter. But it was with 4 weeks' notice. And at the last minute, there were a whole bunch of unexpected expenses, and one of which was the ticket, right? By the time you actually get to the travel agent and all that, 2 weeks' notice, tickets to Africa are not cheap, right? And I was we were out of cash. I was stressed out of my mind. Out of the blue, I got a call from a family friend, said, hey, hope you're well. Don't worry, your tickets are covered. Wait, what? Covered. Oh, and your hotel. Covered. How do you repay people for how? Well, for starters, by saying what? Thank you. That's what's going on in Philippians. You know the story. Paul was in prison, we think in Rome, at the heart of the empire, for preaching the gospel that Jesus is Lord over against the imperial propaganda that Caesar is Lord. He was a traitor to the state. And he's in prison, and the way the Roman prison system works, you're on your own for provisions, food, water, money, all of that. You're at the mercy of family, of friends. But he's over 1,000 miles away from Jerusalem in the epicenter of the empire, and he is all alone, which means he's literally starving to death. And then, lo and behold, a guy by the name of Epaphroditus, a friend from years before in the city of Philippi, a church Paul planted, Epaphroditus showed up in Paul's cell. Paul, you're alive, you're well, I have gifts from your friends in Philippi. Here's money, here's food, here's water, here's clothing, here's all the stuff you need, and Paul was saved. And he's writing Philippians in part to say thank you, right? The end of Philippians, to be honest, is a glorified thank you note. Let's work through the text line by line. He starts off in 10 by saying, I rejoiced greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern. The word rejoiced can be translated celebrate. In fact, the sentence can be translated, hint, hint, the sentence can, I'm having a great celebration in the Lord. Now keep in mind what Paul just said. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about or meditate on such things. These are the kind of things that should be filling up your mind day in and day out. Paul is calling the Philippians and you and me to look out on the world and to celebrate the goodness of God in all creation, in the fresh light of a brand new day, and the colors of fall, and the company of a friend. Paul is calling you and me to wake up to the generosity of God that is all around you. But what I love about Paul is he's not a hypocrite. He's doing that, and he's doing that from where? Prison, his hands tied behind his back, and he's saying, you know what? I'm having a great celebration in the Lord. Because, he goes on, at last you renewed. The word renewed is a botanical metaphor for the budding of a flower at springtime. He's saying, listen, when Epaphroditus showed up in my cell, it was like the end of a cold, dark, long winter in my life and the beginning of a brand new spring. You renewed your concern for me. And by concern, Paul means the gifts, the money, the food, the drink, all that stuff. Indeed, he says, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. Or you cared about me the whole time, but you had no opportunity to share your money with me. Now, we don't know why. The text does not say. Maybe because the Philippians were poor. That's one theory. Maybe because Paul is 800 miles away and off the grid. We don't know. But either way, he's saying, listen, at last you renewed your concern for me. And in essence, Paul is saying what? Thank you. I'm having a great celebration in the Lord. I'm alive and well. Not only that, but the gospel is thriving right in the capital of the world, and it's all because of you and your generosity. Thank you. But Paul's not done. Notice, he goes on to say, 11, I am not saying this because I am in need. Meaning, disclaimer, listen, to clarify, yes, thank you, and thank you very much for the gifts and the money and all of that, but to clarify, I'm not saying thank you because I'm in need. Wait a minute, Paul. What the heck? You are in need, right? He's in prison. He was starving to death. What do you mean, I'm not saying this because I am in need? Well, he goes on, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I'm the kind of guy, he says, who's okay with little or nothing. I mean, yes, thank you for the gifts. Thank you for the money. But to clarify, when I was in prison before that, and I was not depressed and miserable. I was not doubting God. God, where are you in my life? No, in fact, to be honest, I was having a great celebration in the Lord. Starving, mind you, but having a great, I was okay. In fact, I was content because I learned to be content. He goes on, I know what it is to be in need, down and out. Not enough cash to pay the bills, unhealthy, all alone, in a cell. Yep, I know what that's like. And I know what it is to have plenty, money to spare, a roof over my head, a job to go to every day, family, friends, a church all around me. Yep, I know what that is like. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, both whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I have learned the secret of being content. Now, the word secret is moeo in Greek. Can you say moeo? Well done. And it was a word used in the ancient Eastern mystery religions, which were kind of like the first century equivalent of Tom Cruise in Scientology, right? Where you would go through initiation rituals for the gnosis or the secret knowledge, is where we get the word Gnosticism, right? For the secret knowledge. In fact, the sentence can be translated, I have gone through the initiation rituals. I'm on the inside. I found the secret. And Paul claims he found the secret, not the secret, not, but to contentment. Contentment is a funny thing, am I right? It is as elusive as the wind. Everybody's chasing after contentment. Right now, call it contentment in a first century letter. Call it happiness in the West. Call it nirvana in the East. Whatever language you drape over the idea's shoulders, billions of humans all over the planet are chasing after contentment. I want to be content. I want to be happy. I want enough, or I want more than enough, right? But how are you doing? How many of you can say, you know what, I'm with Paul. I learned the secret. I'm content. I don't want more money. I don't want more stuff. I don't want a better living situation or better school or this or that or the other. I'm content single. I'm content this. I'm content. I'm content. I learned the secret. How many of you can? I can't say that. I sure as heck cannot say that, right? But Paul claims he found the secret. And what I love about Paul is nothing about Paul's circumstances says he should be content. Nothing. Right? He's not rich. In fact, he's dirt poor. Nothing. In prison, in squalor. He's not famous. If anything, he's infamous. Wanted by the government as a traitor to the empire. He's not married. He's single. Right? Like two or three of you here tonight. In fact, scholars speculate he was a widower. He's not healthy and good-looking and fresh out of 24-hour fitness, right? I mean, think of the thorn in the flesh, right? I mean, nothing about Paul says he should be content. And here's a guy in prison with nothing saying, you know what, I learned the secret of being content, and heck, I'm having a celebration in the Lord. That is the kind of guy I want to learn from contentment about. A guy with nothing. Now, a few thoughts before we move on contentment from the dude in prison with nothing who is content, right? From the text. Here we go. First off, if you're taking notes, contentment is something you, what? Learn. Notice the language in 11. I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. In 12, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content. Meaning contentment is not natural. It's not the default setting for humans. I think of Adam and Eve in the garden. right? God created Adam, Eve to rule over the world, to gather up all the raw natural resources on the planet and fashion a world for human flourishing, for the living God to dwell with mankind. And God says in Eden, in a garden of delight, he says, you may eat from any tree in the garden. There are hundreds, if not thousands, any tree in the garden, minus one, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That one's off limits, but other than that, eat to your heart's content. And which tree do Adam and Eve eat from? Right, the one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In a garden full of yeses, they want the one thing they cannot have. Are we any different? In a world full of yeses and teeming with the generosity of God, we want this, that. We want the one thing. There's always something just out of your reach. Am I right? If only I was married. I will settle for a date. Okay, whatever. If only I was out of school. If only I was in a vocation. If only I was clear on my calling in life. If only I ... And there's always something just out of your reach. I have three kids, as you know. The majority of you don't yet, but it's a blast when that happens. You will be happy when that happens. You will be content when that happens. That was sarcasm. I'm sorry. I have three kids, two boys and a daughter. My boys' birthdays are 6 days apart, right? Which is epic because it's two, you know, kill two birds with one stone type of deal, which means I'm a cheap dad. One birthday party. It's tomorrow night, right? This week, Moses turned 4 and Jude 7 on Tuesday, right? Here's a video of Moses,
so
my
Moses,
munchkin.
Today is
the night
your
before
last
his birthday.
Night of being 3. What do you think about that? Awesome?
Yeah!
So how did it feel to be 3 for a whole year?
Bad.
Bad? Why bad?
Because I don't like to be 3.
What do you want to be?
I want to be 6.
Well, that's still a couple years away. Is that because Jude is 6?
Yeah.
How about 4? What do you feel about 4?
I don't know.
I think 4 is good. And I think 3 was really good too.
I want to be like as big as Jude.
You will eventually. In fact, you may even be bigger than Jude eventually.
How did you like being 3? Bad. I mean, what is wrong with 3? I mean, your life is all about Legos and story time and organic fishy crackers, right? I mean, what's wrong with 3, you know? How old do you want to be? 6. Why? Because Jude is 6, right? I guarantee you starting Tuesday it will be 7, right? Because Jude is 7. Notice, at 3 years old, I mean, it's incumbent in human DNA. Notice the role that comparison plays in discontentment. I want to be 6. Why? Because Jude is 6. Not enough to be 3. Jude is 6. There will always be a Jude in your life. Always. There will always be somebody older than you, or younger than you, or better looking than you, or smarter than you, or more successful than you, or more intelligent than you, or more educated than you. You will never be the best. Welcome to church. That's my pep talk for the weekend. Right? Seriously. There will always be somebody or something that is just out of your reach. That's why Paul is saying, listen, you need to learn to be content. It's not natural, and there will always be somebody, right? You have to learn to be content. But the beauty of that is you can. In fact, that word learned in the Greek is in the aorist tense, which means it was not an epiphany, not a revelatory kind of flash of light in a moment. Wow, ooh, light bulb, right? I found the secret. No, it was something Paul learned over a long period of time. And learning is hard work. Paul worked at it. How many of you are students? Yeah, easy or hard? Hard work.
Yeah, that's why I dropped out.
Awesome. Your life is easy now. Awesome, right? But, I mean, it's hard work. I mean, I've been in graduate school for years, and gosh, man, it's hard, long, late nights and long hours. It's hard work. Paul says, listen, I worked at it, And over a long period of time, not in a weekend, not in a sermon, not in a prayer, but over a long period of time, I learned the secret to being content. And that means so can you. And so can I. You have the exact same spirit in you that was in the Apostle Paul. You can learn to be content. Paul is saying, listen, life is a laboratory. You're a student. Every day at the job you don't like or the school you're tired of or whatever, you have an opportunity. You have an open door to test and experiment and probe and learn to be content. Contentment is something you learn. Secondly, if you're taking notes, contentment is not dependent on your circumstances. I love how Paul says, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances in 11, and I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation in 12, whether I'm living in want or living in plenty, whether I'm single or married, whether I'm in school or out of school, whether I'm poor, whether I'm, doesn't matter. I have learned the secret in any and every situation. Now, I don't know about you, but the way I'm wired, and I think I'm an archetype for kind of billions of humans on the planet, the way I'm wired, I think when I get X, then I'll be content or happy or at peace or have enough, right? When I get X, then I'll, when you get married, then you'll be content. Or when you get out of college, then, or when you get out of high school, then you'll be content. Or when you this, or when you that. The problem is, you get to the goal, and the goalpost moves, right? I mean, you spend a decade of your life working hard, or 10 years, or a year, or months, or weeks of your life working to a goal, and you get there, and it's glorious for all of a half hour. And then it's cotton candy in your mouth, right? Then the goalpost moves, right? When you're in high school, you think, okay, when I get out of high school and I go to college, right? And then when you're in college, you think, when I get out of college and I find a job. And then when you find a job, you think, okay, when I find a real job. And then, right? And then you think, okay, when I get married. And then, okay, when I have kids. Okay, then when my kids move out. Okay, then when I get a second home. Okay, then when I get a this, that. The American dream is a carrot on a stick. I love that. How old are you? 17. Yes. Yes. Because you know from experience, the beach house, the boat, the SUV was not enough, right? Highlight of the day, right there. I mean, it is. It's a carrot on a stick. It's chasing after the wind. That's why if you are not content now, you will never be. If you are not content, listen to me, listen. If you are not content single, you will never be content married. Trust me. Ask myself.
Who said that? That's awesome.
Ask myself, ask Gerald, ask Jesse, ask any one of the pastors. Hands down, I can spot marriage trouble early on before a couple is married. It's the couples that were like dreaming of marriage every single day. How are you? Not married yet. That is your status in life. Giant sign, not married, right? Those are the couples that hands down have the hardest time in marriage. Because all of your hopes and dreams are on the shoulders of a man or a woman or a marriage, and it's not enough. 6 months into your marriage, I guarantee you're back in my office. Help, pray, it's not. The couples that do the best are the couples that, dude, why aren't you married yet?
I don't know, man, I'm fine, I'm happy, I'm single.
Really? Yeah. Hands down, those couples thrive because they were already content. If you're not content in school, you're not going to be content in a career. If you're not content with one car, you're not going to be content with a new one. You're not, because contentment is not a destination, it's a mode of travel. Right? Meaning it's not a destination like an airport or a city that's on the horizon out there and you get to content. No, it's more like a mode of travel. It's more like an airplane or a rental car. It's a way to get around. It's a way to move through the universe. And it's not dependent. Now, trust me, I get it. Some times in life are hard. Other times are easy. And it's easier to be content in easy times. Absolutely, I get that. I'm a realist. But contentment is not dependent on your circumstances. Now, last, before we move on, contentment is a struggle in times of want and in times of plenty. Get that? Okay, the line that stuck out to me like a sore thumb was in 12. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. Learn the secret, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. That can be translated, I have learned how to be content with plenty. One version says, I have learned how to cope with having too much. What? What are you saying? I have learned how to cope with having too much? Paul is smart. He's an intelligent human being and thinker. And not only that, he's filled with wisdom, which means he knows the way the universe is set up, the way the human DNA is set up, the way money works. The problem with money is that the more money you have, the more you want. Same is true for stuff. The more you have, the more you want. That truth is at the center of the universe, right? When we started the church, I think I made $800 a month, no health insurance, right? Dirt poor, nothing, right? Not nothing, but poor by American standards. But the beauty of that, I remember, I was not sitting around thinking about, what if I had an iPhone 5? I want an iPhone 5, right? Because, I mean, that's like a year's salary. Gross, right? I was not thinking about, oh, I want a new car, oh, a Volvo, or oh, this, or oh. It's not an option. It's not in the universe you inhabit on $800 a month, right? But then you work your tail off, and you work hard, and a year goes by, and 3 years go by, and 8 years go by, and you get a raise or two or three, and next thing you know, you have enough money to pay your bills, and on top of that, you have extra. And maybe it's not much. Maybe it's not much at all, but you have money to spare every single month. Now all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, what do I need? Well, I need an iPhone 5, duh, and an iPad. And an iPad mini, what is the point of an iPad? It's stupid thing. Let's make the iPhone larger and the iPad smaller and nobody will know. Stupid. It's like an article of clothing. Oh, wow, I have 400 shirts, but that one's great. I need a new one. What? Anyway, I need one. Right? And I need this, and I need that. And all of a sudden, your mind is filled up with all the stuff that you do not have because the human thirst for money and stuff is insatiable. What's that famous line? John Rockefeller, the oil tycoon, richest man in the history of America. Economists speculate his net worth in today's dollars would be right around $200 billion. Like way over Bill Gates is nothing compared to Rockefeller, right? What's the famous line? He was asked, how much money is enough? And he said, just a little bit more. That's the lie. How many of you think you would be happier with 10 grand more a year? I love the 8 a.m., the 8 p.m. You're all in college, like, 10 more? Let's start with 10, right? That's awesome. All day long, everybody's like, yeah, tonight you look at me all confused. 10 grand. People do that? People make money, right? I love you so much. Gosh, look forward to you all day long. and the offering basket's awesome. $20 at the end of the night, right? I love you. But how many of you think I would be happier if I had more money or if I had more stuff or I had my own apartment or I had a car or I had a bicycle, whatever, right? Then I would be happy. Then I would be content, but it's never enough. And the problem with money, well, it comes with all sorts of baggage, all sorts of problems and issues. Here's a few thoughts from the Hebrew wisdom literature that Paul was steeped in. Here's a prayer from Proverbs, okay? And he writes, two things I ask of you, Lord, do not refuse me before I die, or two kind of prayer requests, right? First off, keep falsehood and lies far from me. Yeah, that makes sense, a prayer for integrity. But then he says, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I might have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. How many of you have ever prayed that? Not me, I skip right over that. I mean, the first part, absolutely, two things. Okay, what's wisdom? What should I pray for? Keep falsehood and lies, yep, I'm in. Give me neither poverty nor riches. I'm down for the first part, don't give me poverty, Jesus. Right, but the second part, I don't know, Jesus. I mean, that was for Solomon. I think I can handle riches. I think I'm the guy. You know, there's a select few that have the tenacity to steward money for the kingdom of God. I think I'm one. I'm in, Jesus. Right? How many of you have ever prayed, God, whatever you do, don't let me get poor and starve, and don't let me get rich? Just give me enough, God, to pay my bills and to eat and to drink and to fall in bed after a beautiful day. That's all. Don't give me any more. I have never prayed that in my life. And I have read that ever since I was a child. Here's a line from Ecclesiastes, written by a man with a ton of money, King Solomon. The sleep of a laborer is sweet. You know that feeling after a long, hard day's work? Whether they eat little or much, but as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. Because money comes with baggage. Because when you have money, when you have stuff, you worry about your money, you worry about your stuff. Dude, I'm 18, I don't have money, you have an iPhone. Right, whatever, it comes with all sorts of baggage. And the human brain, the human psyche is wired with an unquenchable thirst for more. I want more money, I want more stuff, more, more, more. And I don't know about you, but I want out of the rat race. And Paul says, listen, I found the secret. I found a way out. Well, what is the secret? Keep reading. Look down at your Bibles, 13. He goes on to say, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Turns out, the secret has a name. Through him who gives me strength. Who is that? King Jesus, the living God in flesh and blood. Now, what's funny is that verse is quoted all the time by followers of Jesus out of context. It's not all bad, right? But in context, Paul is not saying, I can win football games through him who gives me strength. Nothing wrong with that at all, right? Or I can make millions of dollars for the kingdom of God through him who gives me strength. Or I can stand up on a stage and preach the gospel through him. Now, none of that's wrong. All of that is fine. All of that is true. But in context, that's not what Paul is saying. In the letter, Paul is saying, I can be content through him who gives me strength. My guess is it's harder to be content than to win a football game. I would not know because I've never done either. But in theory, right? And Paul says, listen, I have learned the secret, and right here in prison with little or nothing, I can be content. How? Through him who gives me strength. Now, all of Paul's language in the text is written over against the backdrop of ancient Near Eastern Greek philosophy, in particular a school of philosophy called Stoicism. To the ancient Greeks, autarkes in Greek, it can be translated contentment in English or self-sufficiency, more on that in a minute. And contentment was the ultimate virtue. Here's a few quotes from philosophers. Socrates, also known as Socrates, was that was awesome. Was asked, who is the wealthiest? And he said, quote, he is richest who is content with the least. For content is the wealth of nature. I love that. He is richest who is content with the least. Dude, you may not know Jesus, but that was spot on. Seneca, who is a Stoic philosopher, right around the time of Paul, in fact, we think he writes a decade before Philippians, the happy man is content with his present lot, no matter what it is, and is reconciled to his circumstances. Meaning, all of that language was well known to the Philippians. Okay, that was the world of Philippi in the first century. And there's a movement all over the empire in Stoicism to react against the opulent luxury and extravagant waste of the empire, which was the ancient equivalent of America, right? And there was a movement to react against all that money and stuff, materialism, greed, and indulgence, and obesity, and all this stuff that is America and that was the empire. And the movement, in essence, says, listen, contentment is the ultimate virtue. But for the Greeks, for the Stoics, contentment was found in self-sufficiency. It was found in saying, listen, I don't need more money. I don't need more stuff, more food, more wine, more sex, more whatever, more power. No, I'm content in and of myself. Self-sufficiency. I'm a Stoic. I'm a philosopher of the mind. I don't need all of that stuff. Now, Paul, the beauty of the text is Paul picks up on all that language from Stoicism, but then he turns it on his head. And he says, yes, contentment is front and center, and I have learned the secret, along with Seneca and all my pals, right? I have learned the secret, but guess what? It's not found in self-sufficiency. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Actually, it's found in dependency on God and on King Jesus. That's where contentment is found. Stoicism in the ancient world says, let go of your desires. I'm very similar to Buddhism in the modern world, right? The Buddha said freedom from suffering is found when you detach from your desires on earth. Very similar to hipster culture. Seriously, my generation, what is the mantra, right? You react, or we react, or whatever, not me, but whatever, to your yuppie suburban upbringing. You move to the city, right? You give up all of your desires for a career, a vocation, a salary, a family. Either you're an artist, which is kind of like an ethnicity in Portland, right? Oh, wow. Oh, you're an artist. Great. Okay. Or you work a dead-end job, right? 35 hours a week. You scrape by. You blow all of your money on food, beer, coffee, and if you don't know Jesus, pot, right? And you let go. Dude, I don't need that. I don't need the American dream. I don't need a house in the burbs. That's lame. That's dumb, right? I don't need a wife. I don't need a family. I don't need any. Dude, I'm fine with food and drink and my friends and my city. It's the exact same mentality. Call it Stoicism, call it Buddhism, call it Portland, right? It's the exact same mentality. It's saying let go of your desires. Paul says, no, no, listen, that's all wrong. God created you with desires and drive and ambition and dreams for a vocation, for a life, for a way to partner with God, to reshape the world. God created you with all that. Don't let go of your desires. Contentment is not found in detachment. No, put your desires in Jesus. Contentment is found when you put your desires in King Jesus, not in a career, not in a vocation. Nothing wrong with that. Have a career, have a vocation, go to college, all of that, great, fabulous. But when your contentment, when your desires are put not in that, not in more money, not in more stuff, not in marriage, not in, but your desires are invested into King Jesus. That is where contentment is found. Like that line, through him who gives me strength, the word, the preposition through in Greek can be translated through or in. In him who gives me strength. Paul is saying that contentment is found in a living union, a symbiotic back and forth relationship with the King of the universe. That's where, and when your life is all about not only the King, but the gospel of the King and the kingdom, the rule, the reign, the inbreaking, healing presence of King Jesus over the world, when that's what your life is about, oh, dude, you're on the right track. That was true for Paul. His life was all about serving King Jesus. That's why he says, I rejoice, not in the money, not in the food and the drink. I mean, thank you for that. But I rejoice for your partnership in the gospel. That's where my joy is coming from. Contentment is found when your life is all about Jesus, in Jesus, day in, day out, morning by morning, night by night. He is your all. And when your life is all about serving the gospel and the kingdom of God. Now, to be honest, I feel like an idiot up here teaching on contentment all weekend. Because if you know me, I think I am the most discontent person I know on the planet, right? And I'm not, that's not exaggeration, right? That's kind of realism. I, on a personality test, on the DISC test, I come out as a developer or an entrepreneur, which means I'm always about the next thing, the next, the next. On Myers-Briggs, I come out as, quote, everything has room for improvement, which sucks, which means I'm all, this can be better, that can be, my mind is racing all the time. Okay, gotta do this, gotta do that, we can go here, we can go there, okay, this can be better, this can be better, that's not good enough, gotta get there, okay, I'm not, right? That's how I think. And it's not all bad to an extent. God created me. And what's the saying? Weakness is strength in excess, right? It's not all bad. But the downside is I'm stressed out all the time because I'm living. My mind is wrapped up in the future and in what I do not have rather than in the moment thanking God for what I do. Having a great celebration of the Lord wherever I'm at. But it's not only that. For me, and my guess is I'm not alone, the root issue is idolatry. Flat out. For me, the root issue is I buy the lie, when I get X, then I'll be content. and I take all sorts of gifts from God, money, stuff, family, church, calling, whatever, all sorts of stuff from God, and I turn gifts into gods. And I move the creator off the center of my life, and I push into place the creation. That's called idolatry. When you worship stuff, and not bad stuff per se, a job, a career, a relationship, romance, not bad stuff at all. But when it becomes an object of worship rather than expression of worship. When all of a sudden your job is your God rather than a way you worship God. When all of a sudden your body is a God rather than a way you worship God. When money is a God, it's ultimate in your life, it's number one, it's what you're chasing after, rather than an expression of worship to the living God through generosity for your church, for the kingdom, for those in need. And the creation and the creator end up backwards in your life. And there is no way, if that's you, there is no way to be content. And for me, that's the root issue. Which is why worship tonight, for me, is about coming back to the center of the universe. And realizing, listen, the center of the universe is King Jesus. Not more money, not more stuff. I don't need any of that because he is enough. Do you believe that? Do you actually full on believe that he is enough? You don't need more money. You don't need more stuff. You don't need to be married. You don't need to be out of school to be content. Why? Because he is enough. Most of the time, I don't actually believe that. Oh, I mouth that. Yes, in my head. But I don't actually believe that. Tonight, for me, worship is about coming back to that reality. He is enough. And the beauty of Jesus is that wherever you are at in life, in times of want, when it's rough, when you're down and out, when you're lonely, you can be filled with joy because your contentment is not dependent on your circumstances. And in times of plenty, when you have more than enough, when life is thriving, it's icing on the cake. Because that's a gift, but that's not your God. It's not where your life is found. Because your life has a name, and it's Jesus. Let's pray.